episode number 283 of the Triple Option with RBKD. On the horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260, streaming live all the time, when and wherever you may be. Live, local, and digital on the Horn app, on Twitch, and at hornfm.com. On today's show, what does DeLoss Dodge think of the job that CDC is doing at Texas? Could Micah Parsons end up being the steal of the draft? And did Garrett Cole just have the worst interview answer in sports history? Joined alongside by a lifetime Longhorn and card-carrying member of DBU, he's a mercenary mouthpiece, pop culture critic, and the one they call Blackstradamus. He is also the inventor of the Corona kit. He is Rod Babers. Rod B, how are we doing today?
Doing good. Glad to have you back, brother. And nice to have the intro back. KD's intro is not as good as yours.
No, I don't put any time into it. I'm more focused on the 4 hours.
Exactly. But yeah, good to have you back, brother.
Good to be back.
Yeah.
Appreciate the kind words from you. Also joined by a lifetime Longhorn.
No, that wasn't a dig on you. It was a dig on me. You also put time into the 4 hours.
Exactly.
I put like 2 minutes worth into the 4 hours. Also joined by a lifetime Longhorn and lifetime Austinite. He's so much of a man, they had to take one of his balls away to keep it fair for the rest of us. He knows where your IT guy's IT guy went to college. He is Kevin Dunn. KD, what's going on?
Doing great. Had Paul in here, apparently hitting on women. Oh. So I don't know what the hell's going on with that. We did EGAT, maybe for the last time here. So I leave that guy alone for like 2 minutes, and all of a sudden, I don't know what's going on. I don't think he was hitting. He was just being Paul.
Being nice. Yeah.
Well, that's not Paul, but yeah, he was being nice.
With an ulterior motive.
Yes, with an ulterior motive. Yeah. But it's muggy outside.
It is.
You know, I always talk about when it's raining outside, it's a perfect time to work, perfect time to do a show, because what else would you be doing? And you could even say that with traffic from 3 to 7. Right. What else would we be doing? Sitting in traffic or sitting at home? With this weather outside? Let's get this thing done. Let's have some fun.
Let's do it.
It's beautiful.
I'll be here as well. I am BK Brad Kellner. Together, we are the Triple Option with RBKD. Rocking and rolling from now until 7 o'clock here on the Horn. We appreciate y'all spending some or all of your Wednesday afternoon with us. All right, gentlemen, getting closer and closer to college football season, 87 days away from the Texas Longhorns opening things up against Louisiana. And we're approaching the time of year where the National College Football Preview magazines drop. You've got your Phil Steeles, your Lindy's, your Athlon Sports, Sports Illustrated, ESPN, a whole bunch of National College Football Preview magazines coming out in the not-too-distant future. And, of course, a lot of the discussion pertaining to the previews for Texas have to do with Steve Sarkisian and the expectations for him in year one at Texas. And most of what we've heard about Sark from folks in the industry has been pretty positive, whether it's from analysts or other coaches or whoever. But one coach that spoke anonymously to Athlon Sports in their preview magazine questioned the hire and doubts that it will work out. Here's the quote. "There are a ton of questions here long term. Why make this move? It doesn't seem like you're doing anything fundamentally different. Texas's problems are all off the field and inside their culture, and I'm not sure this is the coach who can fix issues that only Mack Brown seemed to know how to handle." End quote. Rod B, "Texas's problems are all off the field and inside their culture." That was part of the quote from this anonymous coach. Do you agree with that? And do you think Sark is the coach who can fix those issues?
No, that's not all of their problems, but that's part of it. I mean, it's part of the problems that Texas has is a cultural issue. I mean, there's something chronic going on within the program. It seems to be something that's systemic at this point, and multiple coaches have come through Texas and not been able to diagnose it, whether it be Mack's reinvention, you know, Charlie Strong, who obviously Charlie Strong wasn't up to the task. Tom Herman, who improved the program but still didn't take it to the standard that Longhorn fans obviously expect. And, you know, now Sark is going to try. So there are some things that have, I think, persisted throughout different regimes. But no doubt about it, Tom Herman left the program in a better spot than when he got it. So a lot of those things have been cleaned up. Remember the quarterback hell that Texas was in for so long?
Offensive leading to line hell.
The offense, which is, you know, still an issue, but it's getting better.
It got
much
better.
More improved. The offensive identity crisis that Texas had for a long time. So some of the issues, they still have to deal with, you know, the draft narrative that Texas doesn't develop their blue chip prospects into draftable prospects. I think that is changing too. I think that narrative is going to shift. I think Sark's going to be a big part of that. But yeah, I mean, he's not right, but he's not totally wrong either. I mean, there's some things in there that I do agree with, but a lot that I disagree with too. Can Sark bring it back to the standard, which is really an impossible standard, as we all know? I mean, very few coaches have been able to coach up to that standard. Recently, I mean, Darryl Cairo did it. Hell, Fred Akers probably did it too. If, like KD said, if not for some mishirings, if you will, on the offensive side of the ball.
He's got a statue.
He might have a national title or two. And then, of course, Mac Brown. But, you know, even what Tom Herman did wasn't enough. You know, that one 10-win season he got wasn't enough. So, can Sark do it? We don't know. I don't know at all. I do think he's got a lot of the qualities that it takes to lead this particular specific program back, because there is a lot behind the burnt orange curtain in order to keep the BBs in the box, as the late, great Darryl Cairo used to say, and Mac Brown would also reference. Tom Herman didn't get that part of it and didn't do that at all.
Yeah.
And end up losing a lot of allies behind the scenes and, hell, even with the fans and the media too. So I think for Sark, he's got some of those qualities to be able to unite the fan base and unite the different allegiances behind the burnt orange curtain. On the field, definitely he's got the football acumen and IQ. I mean, and Texas needs an offensively minded coach. He's a quarterback guru, so he's got all that. But has he proven that he can do that? No. We're just going on faith. Let's be honest here, guys. We're just going on faith. He had access to Alabama's resources, if you will, to rejuvenate his career, and I respect him for what he did there. But guys, he had the access to the best talent in the history of college football, with the best head coach in the history of college football. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of support to help you succeed.
You could have.
Yes, he was in the
Period.
Best possible situation
it's
to succeed.
It's an 11 out of a 10.
Yes, and he took advantage of it.
He did.
God bless. He took advantage of it. So we're all going on faith based on what we've seen from Sark recently and learning from mistakes of the past that he could be the guy to lead Texas back. But, yeah, it's on faith.
Yeah.
We don't really have evidence of that.
We've also seen him at Washington and USC. Now, I think he's become a better coach, but how much of that mix are we going to see compared to the OC at Alabama? You nailed this one, Rod. You're one for one.
I appreciate that.
No, seriously. Okay. You did. I mean, when you're an absolutist in life, you're usually going to be wrong. And there's nothing absolute about this. So is there a cultural problem? Absolutely. And there has been something in there. And I do think Herman, like you said, some of those things got better and are in a pretty good spot right now. But the reality is part of this is scheme, too. Mm-hmm. Part of this is misevaluation. Part of this is strength and conditioning. We had guys not doing squats for 3 or 4 years, and then it buries them at the NFL level. There are a lot of things that go into this pie, and to act like it's one ingredient, it's short-sighted, it's immature, and it's just a hot take is what it is. So Rod's right. Is some of that the problem? Absolutely. But you don't have the type of 10 years they've had with the resources they've had and with the recruiting talent that has come in that they've had and have the type of results that they've had without that being, BK, a lot of things that go in to that Long Island iced tea, which I believe is five drinks or five mixes, right?
Nice. Something like that.
There are a lot of things that go into this. So he's not wrong, but to be absolute and say, that is the problem, 100%.
Yeah.
There's maybe 0.00000001% of things in your life that are 100%.
Yeah.
They could even be 98%. This is not a 98%er. This has some 14% in there. It's got some 22% in there. There are a lot of different things that add up. It's not just culture, but it is part of it.
Yeah. I mean, you'd be naive to say that culture and off-the-field issues are not a part of the problem with Texas football, but guys, I don't think there's any doubt what the biggest problem around here has been over the last decade. And yeah. I don't mean to be an absolutist. I'm not saying this is 100% of the problem, but talent development has been the biggest issue.
I would agree.
And that's on the field.
Yes.
Like, I don't know how you could say
that goes with scheming.
All of
too.
The problems are off the field and inside the culture when the biggest problem that Texas has had over the last decade is on the field. Yeah, there's other stuff going on here, but player development has been the biggest issue. Right. They've been able to recruit, they've been able to hire good assistants, they've been able to upgrade facilities, they've been able to do a lot of the things that all of the other blue bloods and a lot of other successful teams in college football have done. But the thing that they have not done is develop talent.
Mm-hmm.
That's the biggest problem that they have.
Now, could that be a lot of things underneath that? So that could be strength and conditioning.
Sure.
That could be scheme. That could be different things, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But, yeah, it's just weird, Rod, that this coach, and I don't know who this coach is. This coach might not know a damn thing about the Texas football program. It doesn't sound like he does, but it's just weird. I mean, that is way off to say that all of the problems are off the field and inside the culture when, to me, and I think anybody who's followed this program knows the biggest problem has to do with the lack of development on the field.
Yeah, it is. I think it's multifactorial. I think what you brought up development, I think in terms of on the field, that's the one big disconnect between bringing the talent in, hiring the right coaches, or hiring at least, you know, good coaches. I think they've actually done a decent job of hiring coaches. Even in the Mac Brown regime, I mean, look at all those guys. They're head coaches now.
Yeah.
Brian Harsin's a head coach. Manny Diaz is a head coach. Hell, Jeff Traylor's a head coach. Jay Norvell's a head coach. It's not like they didn't have scrubs. It's not like they brought in scrubs, but it just, they couldn't get the right concoction, if you will.
Major Apple, right formula. You can go through that list.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
They were good or not as head coaches.
Yeah, whether they're good or not as head coaches, they're respected enough in the industry where
they got a gig.
They got a gig at the highest level. I would say that for one of the things that maybe he's referencing, I don't know, but I think we all know it's true. And KD, you know, behind the burn orange curtain because you've referenced it as well. For a while after, you're going to bring up DeLoss Dodds here later, after DeLoss Dodds stepped down, there wasn't alignment behind the scenes.
There was a lack of leadership.
With that holy trinity. Yeah, because there was a lot of turnover, you know, with the president and different ADs, and not that they all didn't do a good job on their own. OG Stevie P.
But if you're an interim AD, there's only so much you can do.
Yeah, exactly. But it was just exactly. So for Mike Perrin, I understand that, you know, he actually did a really good job considering circumstances.
Better than Stevie P.
A long discussion. Yeah. But now, I will say this, now they do have something similar to what they had back when there seemed to be more unanimity behind the scenes with, you know, with Jay Hartzell, and now with Chris Del Conte and Kevin Eltife, mm-hmm. who's also a big part of that too. There seems to be that alignment now. Everybody on the same page. Everybody got the same vision, and more importantly, everybody believes in the game plan to accomplish that vision together. So I think right now he's in a really good position. Sark is that Tom Herman didn't really have the benefit of, Charlie Strong really didn't have the benefit of, and that's a united group behind him and supporting him.
Agreed, 100%. The second part of that quote from this anonymous coach who once again spoke with Athlon Sports and kind of criticized the Steve Sarkisian hire at Texas, quote, "I'm not sure this is the coach who can fix issues that only Mac Brown seemed to know how to handle," end quote. We think it was Mac Brown who gave this anonymous quote.
And which Mac Brown are we talking about? Are we talking about 03 Mac Brown?
Hmm.
Or are we talking about 2012 Mac Brown?
Yeah, the point I want to bring up is nobody's Mac Brown.
Mm-mm.
Nobody's ever going to be Mac Brown.
Mm-mm.
I mean, he had, and Rod, you could speak to this better than I can, nobody had the ability to make friends and appease every single stakeholder surrounding the Texas football program like Mac Brown did. I mean, that's just not going to happen. That guy could remember anyone's name, and he could talk to anybody, and he was willing to talk to anybody for hours on end. You don't need to do that to be successful in college football. Look at the most successful coaches of this generation. Nick Saban. You think Nick Saban spends hours talking to big money donors and boosters? You think he remembers everybody's names? You think he shakes hands and kiss babies the way Mac Brown did? No. We've heard stories recently about former players under Urban Meyer saying that Urban Meyer didn't even know their name.
Yeah.
Urban Meyer didn't take the time to learn his own players' names. You think he's spending hours on end talking to big money donors and administration and important stakeholders surrounding the program? No.
The best comp is Dabo.
Yes.
Is where Dabo, I can see Dabo. Dabo's got some Mac in him.
My point is,
Dabo modeled his whole entire infrastructure after Mac. He literally said that back in the day, Mac was the only coach that would allow him to come in and see how the sausage was being made. So he basically modeled the entire program after prime Mac in his prime years.
I think BK's point, though, is right on, because Dabo's the only one I can think of.
You talking about Earl Campbell with the sausage? My point is you can win without...
Mac Brown's not walking through that door.
Exactly. Yeah. Number one, Mac Brown's not walking through that door. Sarkisian is not Mac Brown. And number two, you can win. You can be successful in today's college football without doing all of the things that Mac Brown did. Now, we found out through Tom Herman, hey, it's better to have friends. It helps to have good relationships because that makes it harder to fire you. We saw that with Mac, and we saw how easy it was to get rid of Tom Herman. But, Rod, you don't need to do everything that Mac Brown did to be successful here at Texas.
No, but what Mac understood was that it fills in the gaps between you and winning a national title. All those guys you named, the Sabins of the world, they can, Urban Meyers, they can afford to be, I wish I could put it a different way,
a-holes.
Yeah, they can afford to be a-holes. They could. I mean, Nick Saban's winning championships. What are you going to say?
Yeah.
The donors and boosters, all they want to do is win championships. He's winning championships. Stay out of his way.
Right.
Just stay out of his way.
And at the end of the day, I want my coach to be, same thing with like president or someone who's running stuff. I honestly, I'm not buddies with him. Get the job done.
He's getting the job done.
Yeah.
And Urban Meyer was the same way. Mac understood, and I think he was brilliant in his overall assessment of things, just over his self-evaluation, he wasn't winning national titles like that.
No.
He wasn't. 10-win seasons, baby. Enjoy it. But what do you fill in the gap with? That Mac Brown not only was great for the brand, but he provided fans with a sense of pride about their coach, right? Texas high school football coaches loved him. The boosters and the donors loved him because he brought them to practice, had them hang out at practice. He was over there hanging out with boosters and donors while he was also evaluating us during special teams period.
Right. And I remember watching that.
He'd go back and hang out with him as he watched us and take notes. And at the end of practice, he'd bring us all up. Boosters and donors would come around, give us a little word of advice on life, and then we'll keep it moving. But they felt involved. They felt invested with Mac personally. So when Mac wasn't winning national titles but only winning 10 games, the boosters and the donors went, oh, that's my guy, though.
That's your guy.
But as fans,
it was easy to criticize when he's losing to Oklahoma 63-14. And I'm thinking, yeah, I'm at practice and I see you just smooching with a billionaire.
Yeah.
And as we've realized, part of that needs to happen.
Exactly. If you don't do it, Tom Herman didn't do it enough. So Tom Herman didn't build any bridges and didn't have any allies at the end. Mac Brown understood, I'm going to need allies in this game because I can't win the national title every year. And while it took him time to get Texas to the zenith, to the apex, during that time period, what did he do? He just built relationships.
Yeah.
Texas high school football coaches.
Gave him time, too.
The fans, the players, right? It's a family atmosphere. Recruiting bought him a lot of street cred because he was a great recruit. He could always close. And, as I said, Mac could win 9 to 10 games every year, but at one point that wasn't enough.
It wasn't. You know who Mac could have used in college?
Who's that?
Brent Brotsman. Remember Mac's knee? And Mac would even have that walk, and he would talk about it.
Or Florida State.
It's still hurting.
Yeah.
It gets cold outside, I know, before you do. And Brent Brotsman would be the type of guy, orthopedic doctor, who could help out someone, especially if you've got a knee problem. Ankles, knees, and feet. That's what he specializes in. He's been doing it for 25 years. He is a former Division I team physician. Private practice, though, for 25 years. And the guy just knows what he's doing. He's got a great bedside manner. Actually, a lot like Mac. He's a fun guy to talk to. He's going to make you feel welcome, and he's also going to make sure you feel better. And that's the biggest thing. Stem cell shots, PRP shots. There's a lot of different things they can do. That world has completely changed, and he's on top of it. He wrote the only orthopedic book to originate out of Austin. And if you get to that book, you're kind of going to see some of the techniques that he has. Get online or give him a call, 512-977-0000. It's 512-977-0000 or BrotsmanSportsMedicine.com.
Once again, the quote from an anonymous college football coach talking about Steve Sarkisian. Quote, there are a ton of questions here long term. Why make this move? It doesn't seem like you're doing anything fundamentally different. Texas's problems are all off the field and inside their culture, and I'm not sure This is the coach who can fix issues that only Mac Brown seemed to know how to handle, end quote.
And we don't know, but he doesn't know if he can either. I don't know if he will, but I'm not going to say he can't.
Right. We'll wait and see.
Yes.
Yeah, we just don't know.
87 days away from Texas and Louisiana. Of course, we are the flagship for Texas Longhorn Sports. We will have every UT football game here on the Horn. We'll get back into this conversation a little bit later in the program. It is the Triple Option with RBKD alongside Rod Babers, the All-American, and Kevin Dunn. I am BK Brad Kellner. When we come back, could this guy be the difference maker for the Dallas Cowboys this season? That's next.
All right, welcome back to the Triple Option. We are distracted. There's no doubt about it. There's a puppy in the studio. And KD's just off the mic because he's getting some puppy therapy. And you know what? I'm all for it. I got some puppy therapy all throughout the break. Got some puppy love. It was great. BK, you got to get some of this puppy therapy, man.
Is that right?
It's good for, it's like chicken soup for the soul.
Whose dog is that?
KD's over here getting it in. Look at him.
I need this.
Yeah, I know. Isn't it great?
I miss animals.
They need to bring puppies around here more often.
Can you not say getting it in when talking about a puppy, please?
Getting in the therapy.
Look at this little guy. Can you see him?
I can.
No, his name is on Twitch.
Oh, you're going to love this. His name is sports related. His name is Ribby. RBI.
Should it not be Ribby's?
Oh, that's because they're such baseball people.
It's your Ribby.
Whose dog is it?
Janet's.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Well, I think it's like their family dog, but really cute.
Wow.
I know. Puppy love. I told her, I said, I didn't even want to hold it because I didn't want to give it up once I held it because it's hard to give up a puppy. It like hurts to give up a puppy.
Oh, man. That thing's adorable.
Dude, you got to get some of it. You know what? After this, we got to get BK some of this puppy love.
Yeah.
Puppy therapy, man. It's great. I took a selfie with the puppy, too, so maybe I'll post it so people know how cute the puppy is. All right. Anyway, like I said, we're distracted here.
Wow. The show's done.
The show, as I was saying.
I mean, if there's a puppy here until 7 o'clock, we're not going to get anything done. Oh, man.
I agree. I don't know if we're going to get anything done. All right. We'll do our best here. All right. Let's talk some Dallas Cowboys, actually. I saw this little nugget at NFL.com, and then I actually saw some of my favorite Dallas Cowboys Dallas Cowboys media members also giving some props to Dan Quinn and the defensive staff for their creative usage of Michael Parsons so far in some of the organized team activities. So in an effort to experiment and try to get their best players on the field, Dan Quinn is utilizing Micah Parsons in a DPR position, the designated pass rusher position. He said, in addition to a middle linebacker duties, he's also going to play the designated pass rusher role for the Cowboys. I thought this was pretty interesting because if you look at it, he started out as a defensive end. I think in high school, he was actually a defensive end when he was being recruited.
That's all he was.
That's all he was.
Yeah.
So he's got a pass rushing background. And, of course, he was used as a blitzer. And even remember Jerry Jones on draft day brought up the fact that he liked Michael Parsons as a pass rusher. That was one of his elite attributes, one of his part of his elite traits that he likes about him. And they also went on to say having Parsons playing the pass rushing role will allow the Cowboys to kind of put their best 11 out there. It says that Keanu Neal is him and Jalen Smith are the other front runner linebackers to get more playing time. Leighton Vander Esch, a lot of people believe is being he's kind of been being ushered aside. Maybe even some people looking to trade him if some team may be interested in trading for Leighton Vander Esch, which I doubt. Dallas' primary edge rusher, of course, is DeMarcus Lawrence. Randy Gregory, also their primary edge rusher. But I think Parsons is going to be used more in blitz packages, in blitz roles, either off the edge or they could be blitzing him through interior gaps as well. BK, you're the Cowboys fan. They drafted this guy to help rebuild the defense. They're going to build around his athleticism. Do you like how they're using him? They're basically going to move him around everywhere.
Well, it makes more sense to spend a top 12 draft pick on a guy who is going to be an edge rusher versus an off-ball linebacker.
Very true.
But I do get a little weary when I hear about this much cross-training.
Yeah.
I think of Isaiah Simmons, who was more suited to play various positions than Micah Parsons is. And Isaiah Simmons did not have a great rookie year. He came on strong towards the end, he looked overwhelmed for the vast majority of his first season, and people were saying that guy is the most versatile defensive player in the league already. And the Cardinals tried to use him everywhere, and he wasn't good anywhere. So that does worry me a little bit. And even Micah Parsons himself, KD, said it was a little hectic how many ways he's being used at Cowboys camp so far. So, look, I like that he's learning a lot, but it does scare me that the Cowboys are playing him at pretty much every single linebacker position and letting him come off the edge, too. That might be a little bit too much for a guy to handle in his first offseason.
And that's why you make some good points there, and I think that is a worry right now. I saw him at Penn State. That's what he did. He's not that good of a linebacker yet. I think he can grow into it. He's a physical freak, so I'm not saying he can't do it. It's just he hadn't played it that long, and it shows that he doesn't have a lot of reps. Did you guys take a linebacker to be an edge rusher instead of taking an edge rusher? You could have taken maybe...
He's a physical freak, though.
He is.
I think he's a freak.
We'll see if he grows into it, but I think BK brings up some good points. He certainly hasn't mastered the linebacking position. Right. He's got a long way to go. So you want to get him on the field, and you want to put him in the best spots where he's comfortable, and right now that would be an edge guy. But if you're moving him all over, I think that's almost too soon. I would let him kind of play into this a little bit.
So the plan might be for this year to use Micah Parsons more as an edge rusher, and then after one of or both of Leighton Vander Esch and Jalen Smith leaves, then transition Micah Parsons to more of a traditional linebacker role. Like, that might be the Cowboys' goal here. This might be a one-year bit where they just focus on Micah Parsons being that DPR, that defensive pass-rushing specialist. Now, I hope he gets some run. If Jalen Smith and Leighton Vander Esch play the way that they did last year, then Micah Parsons better be getting some run at one of those two linebacker spots, because you can't deal with that again if you're the Cowboys' defense. Those guys were awful, and they were a huge part of why last year's Cowboys' defense was the worst defense in franchise history. But if those guys can get back to what we've seen from them at points during their NFL careers, then, Rod, maybe you can use Micah Parsons as more of that edge rusher and rotate him in with the Marcus Lawrence and Randy Gregory out there.
Yeah, it all depends, right? I think they're moving him around right now just in case, let's say, Randy Gregory and DeMarcus Lawrence wreak havoc next year. You know, does the DPR position take one of your defensive ends off the field? Does it take one of your pass rushers off the field? And if those guys are playing really well, you're not going to take them off the field. They would probably put him at one of those interior line, those off-ball linebacker spots, and then use him as a blitzer then. So I think they're just giving themselves options just in case. You know, what if Randy Gregory and DeMarcus Lawrence are underachieving like they did last year, at least a lot of last season, most of that defense did, then you'll probably use him more in that DPR role, that designated pass rusher role. So I think they're just moving him around just so that they can give themselves options depending on what the outcome is of the defense, because they have no idea. It's going to be a new defense, all right? Dan Quinn's coming up with a new system. By the way, Dan Quinn doesn't even know what this damn system's going to look like. He's basically admitted that. It's going to be new to him. Because everybody asked him, are you going to run the same system you've been running? Because, by the way, that system is garbage now. All right,
especially with this secondary compared to the one that he had when it worked.
You don't have Richard Sherman in his prime. You don't have Earl Thomas in his prime. You don't have Cam Chancellor in his prime. You ain't got that same group. What are you going to do to adjust your system? And he's saying, all right, I'm going to adjust it. I've actually added some tweaks. It's got the same fundamentals, basically, but I've added a few kind of modernized concepts to bring it to the 21st century. So either way, my point is nobody knows how the defense is going to look and what the outcome is going to be. So I think they're just preparing themselves for that. It's contingency plans.
But not only if their production's not good, these are also two injury-prone linebackers, one specifically. So I think he better be ready to play that and have some reps under his belt. And I just think he needs as many reps right now as he can get at the linebacking spot.
And if Micah Parsons is as good as the Cowboys think he is, he's going to find his way on the field in some capacity. But the days of having three linebackers on the field at all times are done.
They're done.
Yes,
right? Nickel is base now. So This is, to me, the Cowboys just finding a way to get Micah Parsons on the field as quickly as they possibly can, but you run the risk of having the Isaiah Simmons thing happen to where you're just giving him too much. Rod, you can attest to this.
Me?
It's a big leap going from college to the NFL. Even if you're just focusing on one position, it's pretty damn hard to grasp what it takes to be an NFL player. And they're trying to throw four different spots at Micah Parsons. Not everybody, hell, very few people are capable of learning all of that.
Yeah, but I wonder now, giving all the reasons that all you guys just brought up and I brought up too, if I don't know if they have a choice. I think they don't have the luxury because the defense was so bad and so now it's so bereft of talent. I don't know if they have the luxury of going, all right, let's just put him at designated pass rusher for this year. Let him learn that, and then we will slowly transition him over. You brought up the injuries that they got to worry about, so they got to have a plan B. He's that plan B. They don't really know what the defense is actually going to look like schematically. Do you take Randy Gregory or DeMarcus Lawrence off the field to put in your designated pass rusher? And that's the case, how does that look? You know what I mean? So I think there's so many questions right now. I don't even know if they know who their actual starting linebackers are going to be. Because I don't think they wanted to be Leighton Vander Esch. They got the money invested in Jalen Smith, and then you brought in Keanu Neal, who they're moving to linebacker too, and that's a Dan Quinn guy. And then, of course, you just drafted Michael Parsons. I think BK's right too. They don't really know where they're going to put him, but they want to give themselves the option to put him anywhere to make sure he's on the field as a part of their best 11.
Yeah.
Whether it's at, maybe it's at will, maybe it's at off ball, maybe it's a designated pass rusher, wherever it's going to be, he's going to be on the damn field. They're like, we're not going to, because then people will get questioning about wasting draft capital on the number 12 overall pick, and he ain't playing.
Yeah.
Then that's even a bigger question. Like, why'd you do that if he's not going to play? And your defense was so bad last year, the worst in Cowboys history, arguably. If that guy can't see the field and he drafted him 12 overall, what the hell's going on?
Yeah, like, you already took a guy at a position of extremely low value, and he's not good enough to even see the field.
Yeah,
there are already a ton of Cowboys fans who are ticked off with the pick, and if he's not good enough to be on the field a year after you just fielded your worst defense ever, that's going to be a problem.
It's going to be a problem,
but you're going to have to mute that out and say, look, we've got a long-term plan for this guy, and he's going to grow into it. And I know what you guys are saying. They're going to hear it on the back end, and their back end and their whole defense wasn't very good. So fans will be pissed off about it. Getting back to BK's point, though, I mean, the speed changes so much going from college to pros that, Rod, even if you played a position and you have that position locked down, you psychologically and mentally really know that position, he doesn't.
No.
It's going to be a big adjustment for him.
And that's why, maybe to solve all those problems, going back to BK's original point, they just use him on third down situationally, third and long, predictable passing downs. That way nobody can get on them and criticize them for not using that player they drafted number 12 overall. He's playing, but getting back to your point, we don't want to rush him, and we don't want to stunt his development as a player, so we're going to just make it easy for him. Just go out there and rush the damn passer.
Yeah.
All right? It's a passing down. You're out there rushing the passer. That's it. And you'll go three DNs on the field base. You go Randy Gregory, DeMarcus Lawrence, and you can have him on the field. Just move Randy Gregory inside, and then you can have your NASCAR package defensively.
C-ball, CQB, go get him.
Yeah, simple.
You can do that.
Do you guys think this is how Keanu Neal pronounces his name?
Keanu.
What is that from?
That's that progressive commercial.
Oh, it Dr. is. Rick.
We all see it. We all see it.
Yes, blue hair.
Okay.
Blue.
Yeah.
Keanu.
What are you trying to pronounce? Quinoa?
Yeah.
Quinoa, yeah.
You got the guy who says Joaquin.
Yeah.
And then you've got the woman.
Keanu.
Oh, man.
So every time we talk about Keanu Neal, I might have to play that drop.
Those commercials this season.
They really are.
The best commercials on TV, and I don't watch a lot of commercials, are insurance commercials right now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, how did that happen?
I don't know, but they all kill it. They all have their own little theme, and it's kind of, some of them kind of wacky. Some of them I don't get, but think about the best insurance commercials where it's Progressive, or you're talking about, I don't know, State Farm
back in the day wasn't good. Remember, it was like, State Farm is there. It was just a jingle.
Geico.
Geico is the king.
Yeah, I mean, the insurance, I don't think anybody beats insurance commercials right now, insurance companies.
They're great.
They're awesome.
You're missing out not watching a lot of commercials, by the way.
No,
really?
Not. No, you're doing it the right
way. Do you watch commercials?
More than anyone I know.
That is amazing.
He loves commercials.
Well, all I do is watch live sports. I don't watch any TV shows or movies.
Yeah.
So commercials are inevitable.
Yeah. And so you got to learn how to like it. Embrace the suck,
oh, dude. I'm known as the guy who memorizes every commercial.
Wow.
Like I'll be with friends, a commercial comes on, and I'll start reciting the words to the commercials.
That is amazing.
Oh, it's terrible. It's the worst skill ever.
It's a bad bit.
No, it's not amazing. No. It's a problem.
Well, yeah, but you're right, though. If you watch a lot of live sports, you watch a lot of live commercials.
Yeah.
I like to put them. I like to have a buffer. When I watch live sports, I have a buffer.
Bruce or Michael?
No, a buffer in my DVR. Like I watch,
start 20 minutes late.
I watch everything. I watch every sporting event pretty much 30 to 45 minutes back. That's why I don't go on Twitter while I'm watching. If I'm going to watch a football game, I can't go on Twitter while the game's happening.
Yeah,
because people are just spoiling the game for me. So yep. I just tune out for that 3 hours and watch the game. But I fast forward through most of the commercials.
It's a mistake.
It's a mistake.
What about the FOMO?
The
commercial FOMO. Oh, the C-FOMO.
The Twitter FOMO. I did see a good one. I think there's a Hanes underwear commercial, and it's about like fitting underwear for men. And the guy says,
better than the Hitler one back in the day.
It's better than the Hitler stash by MJ. You're right. He was on a plane, right, with that Hitler stash? I think he was on like a plane or something. Anyway,
why did they let him get on that plane?
I know.
With the Hitler stash.
Yeah.
They talk about having balance, and it's underwear with balance. Balance for your
so instead of balance, balance. I want you to be hard. Yeah. Well,
but so I don't watch
my balance has been off for a little while.
Yeah, they don't want your balance off, man. You want to have it. You want to every. Oh, but it struck me. I was like, actually, that's a good commercial because every man worries about balance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know what I mean. Make sure it fits the right way.
I guess so.
Yeah,
unbelievable. It's the triple option with RBK.
We're not going to get
Gregory.
It up.
Yeah, that's on me. A lot of praise for Micah Parsons. Some Dallas media said he has been the biggest defensive standout during minicamp thus far. The Cowboys are using him in a multitude of different ways. We'll see if it works out for the Cowboys' first round pick. It's the triple option with RBKD. Oh, by the way, we are the home for the Dallas Cowboys here in Central Texas, so we'll have every Cowboys game right here on the Horn. It's the triple option with RBKD. When we come back, not only will we have every Cowboys game this year, we'll have every Texas game this year. And we are 87 days away from the Longhorns opening up the 2021 season against Louisiana. Who are the best Longhorns to ever wear the jersey number 87? We debate next.
Texas football. It's getting closer. Still a ways away, although this weather is starting to remind me of what it's going to be like probably for that, 2:30 start.
Man, it got up to 90 today, didn't it?
Yeah, close. Just muggy, too.
Like 88 or something.
No, it was 95 in my car at one point. So
yeah, it's 91 right now, yeah. It feels like summer.
You could feel it, and Billy Napier will be bringing in Louisiana. That'll be 87 days from today. So 87 days away for the Texas opener. We talked about that a little bit on EGAT, and I'm curious, where'd you guys put the line right now for that game? Because
Texas, Louisiana?
Yeah, maybe it's already been out. I would think that they're going to be on the road. So
I think it is out somewhere.
I would think it's like 2 or 3 and nothing more than that, right? And
Texas?
I
think so. Texas, yeah, by 2 or 3.
Texas by 2 or 3. Yeah. I could totally understand Louisiana being favored by 1, though.
It's crazy.
This is a top 25 team.
As I said, they're going to be ranked higher than Texas.
Yes.
Right?
They probably should be.
And then Texas is going to be favored because it's going to be a home game for Texas.
Home game, yeah.
So I think they'll give Texas. I think it'll be, since it's 3 points for a home team, I think it'll be Texas by 4.
Okay.
Maybe 3.5.
If it's Texas by 6, jump on that early. And when I say jump on it, jump on Louisiana and hope that you're wrong and just eat the money.
Mm.
If memory serves, a line that I saw recently was Texas minus 4.5.
I want to say you might be right.
I think it's
about
somewhere
that.
Around there.
I think you're right about that.
And Texas is going to open up as the favorite, and I think they are going to be favored by more than a field goal. And I do think whatever the opening line is, it will go down by the time kickoff gets here.
Yep, agreed.
I think people are going to bet on Louisiana. I know people always buy into Texas, but I think people know about Texas's early season struggles in the recent past, and I think people know how good Louisiana was last year, and I think people know what Louisiana did to Iowa State in week 1 of last year's college football season. So Texas is going to open up as the favorite, and they should, but I do think that line's going to come down and get a little bit closer to even as we approach kickoff.
I agree with that.
87. Best 87s. I know the best voice for a number 87 here ever.
Who that?
Remember Chris Smith?
Oh,
yeah.
Big Screw.
He had some ballins working.
Yeah, we called him Big Screw. I don't know why they called him Big Screw.
Is it Palestine or Palestine?
Yeah, I always heard he was related to Adrian Peterson.
Yeah, they're from the same city.
Yeah, I want to say he said that they were kinfolk somehow. Kinfolk.
Kinfolk, man. That means shows you, yeah.
You don't know exactly how you're related, but we kinfolk. Well, it's like me and Dino Babers.
Kinfolk somewhere that's down kinfolk. The line. There are not a lot of Babers, so you probably are related to them.
That's kinfolk right there.
Best 87s on the field, though.
Lawrence Sampleton. Hub Bechtel.
Hub Bechtel.
Yeah. Hub Bechtel.
Hub Bechtel's a guy. Two-time or three-time All-American?
Three-time All-American. Dude, I remember watching him play back in the
place. Oh, man.
Nobody right. better. I mean, he played both ways.
All right.
Tight end, D end, front end, left end, right end, back end, side end, northwest end. He played every end there was. It was ridiculous. Man, he and Bobby Lane, what a connection those two had. The four times Texas would pass during a game, they were lethal.
So the funny thing about Texas, and they didn't throw a lot, so the joke is still there. But for back then, they actually did throw, and they threw more with Bobby Lane than they would maybe even 20 years later.
Oh, like DKR?
Yeah. They threw the ball, especially for back then. Bechtel's bigger than people think. Bechtel's 6'3", 210 around there, which back then,
that's 7'2", 350.
Exactly. that is gigantic.
On the scale.
But he apparently was a pretty damn good player, man.
He might as well have been Tony Gonzalez back then.
Yeah.
Like just towering over people.
Lawrence Sampleton was a freak.
What years did Lawrence Sampleton play? Because I know he was
early
good,
80s.
Early 80s. Okay.
I will believe that would have been it. Let me get an actual time for you. Here.
No. I was just curious. My man Shano, Kyle Shanahan, also was 87.
Yeah.
So shout out to Shano.
Shano was better than people think because he complemented the skill set guys they had. You had Roy, you had BJ, you had Sloan, and
Tony
and
Jeffrey.
Tony Jeffrey
are there.
Tony Jeffrey, yeah. You're right. And then they had Shano. Our receiver core was pretty damn good. We had some
sample 82 draft. So there
in
you
the
go.
One on ones, then 82 draft.
Yep.
Okay.
Second round pick from the Eagles.
Second round pick.
Yeah.
Man.
See him at Chinatown a lot too. I think he's got some ownership there.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Nice.
Shout out
Chinatown. Great spot.
Little Ronnie Chang and Lawrence Sampleton. That's a duo for you.
Oh, man. Not getting in the way of those two.
No, sir.
Neil Tweedy.
That's
a great name.
87.
Yeah. Glorified tackle.
Glorified.
What was he, a tight end?
He was tight end. But I mean,
one of those tight ends. Yeah.
I think Garrett Gray was 87 too. He's also a glorified tackle tight end guy. Didn't see the field a whole lot, but he was one of those tweeners, methinks.
Mark Steed, defensive end in the late 80s.
Okay. Take your word for it.
You got to. You're just going to have to, okay?
Your memory is ridiculous. I'll take your word for it.
Hub Bechtel, clearly the best 87 in school history.
Yeah.
Three-time All-American, also a Hall of Honor guy as well. He was a first-round pick in the NFL draft, had a decent career in the league.
I met his son. And his son had...
What is Hub's son's name? Is he Hub Jr.?
I think he's Hub Jr.
That's awesome. If your name is Hub and you become a badass, like you're awesome, and you got to keep the Hub name alive because there are no Hubs out there.
And he played
Texas,
too.
He may be the last Hub on Earth.
Yeah.
Like, that's just not a name you hear very often.
Yeah, I mean, his real name was Hubert.
Oh, okay.
They just went by Hub.
Went by Hub. All right, there you go.
And that's better than Hubert, right?
Yeah.
I mean... I don't think
Hub is better than Hubert.
I don't think your parents.
I think Hub's better.
Really?
I'm going Hub.
Only if you're good at football.
This isn't like Wilhelm DeWill. Okay.
If you're a Hub working at Enterprise Rent a Car, I don't know if it's great.
What if the guy next to you is named Cap? Does that make it better?
Hub. You're a three-time All-American named Hub.
Hub
makes the name cool.
Right.
but
Hub working at 7-Eleven is not the same.
No.
Will Hubert ever be cool? Even if you're a three-time All-American.
Hubert Davis.
Yeah, I don't think he's that cool.
No, he's actually not. The name kind of fits him. He's kind of nerdy.
Yeah. And I feel like your parents are doing you a day one disservice if they name you
Hubert. Okay, you know, we're going to find a famous Hubert.
Hey, quickly on Hub and his son. First off, his son is older now. Very, very nice gentleman. He played at Texas as well. Awesome wife. They were just really fun to talk to. But he's got those hands. And, Rod, you would have seen this a lot in the league. But just those big,
No, big hands.
Big, beat up, strong country hands. I mean, I literally saw the hands and I thought, you played ball.
Yeah, they all got scars on them.
Yes, I did. I played racquetball or handball.
They're all crooked, going different, like fingers going in different directions.
Just big.
Yeah.
Hands and feet, man. Look at athletes' feet. Like, I remember on Inside the NBA a couple of years ago, Shaq took off his shoe here? And sock.
No, he's right, though.
Yeah. Showed everyone his feet. Yep. Disgusting.
Toenails have fallen off.
Do you know the most messed
up? Toenails regrow. They
you know regrow. The most messed up feet I've ever seen?
Who's that?
Dikembe Mutombo.
I believe that.
It was, I just felt bad for him. I mean, I did.
You felt bad for Dikembe?
I did. And I just thought, oh, my God, what the hell is going on down there?
Oh, man.
You know what I gave him? I gave him a finger wag.
There you go.
Like for his feet?
Yeah.
They tell athletes to
remember, he used to do that when he'd block a shot.
Oh, that was iconic, man.
And then Jordan dunked on him and gave it to him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You think Mutombo ever gets tired of people giving him the finger wag? Because I feel like everywhere he goes, somebody is doing that.
Wasn't that only
he was such an affable guy. He's the life of the room.
Wasn't that on an insurance commercial?
Geico.
Man.
Happier than Dikembe Mutombo blocking a shot.
Yeah.
He's in the grocery store, supermarket aisle. Kid tries to throw a cereal box into the cart, smacks it away. And at the end of the commercial, he smacks one of the Geico letters off the screen. Told you guys, every commercial.
Dude, you watch way too much commercials. That's a great description of that commercial. All I can remember was Dikembe Mutombo in an insurance commercial.
Well, can you imagine any time that he goes to a camp or anything, their kids are lining up like, no, I want you to block my shot. Just block it. It's like, okay, I'll block that one, then block that one, then block that one. Here are a couple wags.
You're right.
It's got to get annoying at some point.
It's probably annoying.
It has to. So there you go, 87 days away from Texas Longhorn football, the best Longhorn to ever wear the jersey number 87. We're going with the great Hub Bechdel, three-time All-American in the 40s.
Hub.
Hubert.
He went by Hub.
Hubert Bechdel. Let's call the man Hubert from now on.
Yeah.
Yeah, give him some respect.
Do you know what his son called him?
Hub. Daddy.
Daddy, that is such a, I love that. Daddy. It's kind of like a southern thing.
Daddy.
Daddy. Mama and Daddy. No, he called him Hub.
Oh, you called him Hub?
Yeah.
All right. And he's still Hub then. That's there are no famous daddy. Huberts, though. I'm just saying he could be the most famous Hubert probably in America.
You don't want that title.
Like, there are no, what's the most famous Hubert?
Hubert Humphrey? Or no, Hubert Humphrey. Good call there.
That's it. But most people don't even remember
just
Hubert Humphrey. They have no idea what Hubert Humphrey is. See? Most people don't know what that is.
No idea.
See?
You don't
exactly.
know.
Most people don't know.
None.
I know the name.
Okay.
I can't tell you what he does.
Or what he did.
Somebody famous in American history.
Maybe. He was a politician. He was a VP at one time.
Okay. Back in the day. All right, that would have been my guess.
Right. Yeah.
I knew he wasn't a president, but I figured politics was the line of work.
Pretty good guess.
Yeah. It took me a while to get there. It's the triple option with RBKD.
Hub Humphrey.
When we come back, DeLoss Dodds. Former UT athletic
director. Not a lot of DeLosses out there either.
Not a lot of DeLosses out there. DeLoss Dodds might be the greatest DeLoss.
Should he be D-Lo based on y'all? D-Lo Dodds.
What about Debo, the guy who snatches up the jewelry in Friday? Think DeLoss Dodds wants to be that guy?
Oh, man. That might be pretty cool, though. See, CDC's got a nickname. Why can't DeLoss Dodds get one? D-Lo. All right, done deal. I'll text him and let him know.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll love that. DeLoss Dodds recently spoke with Kirk Bowles and Cedric Golden on their podcast through Hook'em.com, and he talked about the job CDC is doing and also talked about how close Texas was to leaving the Big 12 a few years ago. And he gave a surprising answer to where the Longhorns would have gone. That's next.